Good morning. Nice to see you all on this sunny equinox weekend. Yeah, so I hope you'll have time today to savor the moment of the pivot into next season and not grieve the loss of summer, but to just go beyond all that, all those ideas, and appreciate this tipping point, enjoying the lake, the sky, feeling fully alive. So this weekend we've had an intimate group here doing retreat, and we're contemplating the theme of being peace and enacting harmony. And the impetus for this was making a connection to this group called Twin Cities Nonviolent, that's doing 10 days of nonviolent events using the arts and education and ceremony ritual. And so it's a coalition, and one of our members has been very active in that group and supporting that effort, and I thought it would be good to connect to that. And so we're practicing nonviolence within the self in our retreat. We're practicing living and moving as one body in harmony together. And by sitting, walking, eating, resting, mindfully, each activity with mindfulness, calming the mind, watering the seeds of peace in ourselves. And this turns out to be pretty, to look quite a bit like what we usually do on retreat here. Pretty compatible with Western Zen in general. So, but we have this focus, we have this focal point. And sometimes when we sit down with this particular focus, with a particular focus, what we first notice is the non-peace within, the agitation, the aggressive thoughts and impulses, the feelings of irritation. That's just really human. So that's what first shows up when we say, let's practice peace. So luckily we're experienced enough, or we're just open enough to realize that that's how the mind works often. Sometimes it works the other way. Sometimes we feel blissful, we feel peaceful, but then an hour later we don't. So we try not to be too surprised or thrown by that. And we have the support in the retreat to deal with that. And so it's a good opportunity. We don't have to be embarrassed by our irritation, our the aggression we notice. We're in a safe and supportive environment. So the practice is to see that, to accept it, realize it, and just go back to the focus. Go back to just breathing in, breathing out mindfully, calming the mind, tranquil, becoming still. So it gives us, retreats give us this opportunity of practicing both with rigorousness, it can be pretty rigorous, and with gentleness, both. and to let down our defensive postures together in solitude and in silence. It kind of gently wears away our ego operating system and our defenses like water flowing over rocks. And then we have the opportunity to see what comes up from what Thich Nhat Hanh calls storehouse consciousness. And there's something about putting ourselves into the position where we limit our activity and we're given a focus, we have an intention that brings that stuff up so we can see it. It's not all the distractions, so there it is. And that's our practice. You can see those seeds ripening right there, showing themselves to us. The seeds of peace and joy, and also the seeds of agitation, ill will, irritation. So again and again, the practice is going straight and being upright. In retreat, I might say everyday life too, but especially in retreat. So it means we just keep going in upright posture, no matter that we desire things to be a little less rigorous, a little less uncomfortable, a little more interesting, a little more stimulating. So we want less of this, more of that, but we let go of that. So this mind of, we practice stopping the mind of picking and choosing. We get tired of it. We get so tired of it that we finally drop it. We just drop it off. And so simultaneously with that, the stillness seeps in. Kind of seeps in like walking through the mist, not realizing you're getting soaked. So it seeps in through our pores and sometimes into our bones and marrow. And when that happens, then we're really doing the practice. But it doesn't matter when that begins, when that point of really doing the practice begins, or whether we can maintain continuity under all circumstances, not right at the beginning, because it is the practice realization Dogen talks about, just as it is, and there's no failure in it. It's an activity beyond success and failure, but we do have to engage it. So yesterday I talked with the group about one of our most basic human needs, that of having a warm heart connection with ourselves and others. And the more the better, up to a point. Also could include our pets, but should include at least a few humans. So our situation is that we're completely alone. We're completely alone. We can't, no one else can come and sit on the cushion for us. We have to do that by ourselves. But we don't thrive spiritually or emotionally without these bonds, these warm human connections. And that's why Sangha is the third of the triple treasures, the three treasures. Thich Nhat Hanh, in his decades of teaching, has emphasized this over and over again, that this aspect of both human life and Dharma, of warm bonds, heart-centered connection, heart-opening, mutually vulnerable relationships that help to heal the split in our consciousness, and also help to ameliorate human arrogance and the disconnection that we sometimes feel, the separation. So there's a lot of social theories about what causes and feeds violence in our culture these days. And some of them are our speedy way of life, the legitimization and easy access to guns, media images that seem to glorify it to the point where it's become an essential ingredient to in entertainment media, games and movies. Also the weakening of family systems and neighborhood community bonds. And then there are explanations that fit opposing sides of the political discourse. For instance, on one side, outsized military budgets and the militarization of domestic police forces, plus racism, abuses of power and privilege. And on the other side, there's the belief that illegal immigrants and open borders, plus Muslims and other minority groups, are threatening our peaceful way of life with violence and acts of terror. So different views of what's causing the problem. And both Thich Nhat Hanh and Kadagiri Roshi taught that human conflict and aggression at the base are caused by this disconnection and alienation from our own hearts and our community ideals and ethics and the warm and protective bonds with others, and how that works alongside the three poisons of ignorance, ill will, and delusion. Oh, wait a minute. No, greed. Greed, hate, and delusion. Greed, ill will, and delusion. And Thich Nhat Hanh especially has pointed out how our greed and self-centeredness has impacted the earth and given a lot of very practical practices for how we can take small steps to try to change that in our own lives. And he has also especially served as an extremely powerful living example of living those intentions and vows. His life and his teaching has been formed by the suffering and extreme loss of life in his home country of Vietnam. He was a young monk in the order called, Thiep Hien Order, a Vietnamese Buddhist order in the lineage of Lin Chi. So his teachings on nonviolence and peace and being peace were forged in the fire of death and destruction. Yesterday I read a passage to the group about where he describes what happened in his country and the way that the young monks tried to address that by not agreeing with either side, not taking sides in the conflict. And for that, that wasn't understood very well by the governments. And so eventually Thich Nhat Hanh was stripped of his citizenship and couldn't go back to his country because of his work, which was to try to bring peace to an understanding. His big teaching is of trying to understand deeply both sides to any conflict. And so along those lines, he talks about the precept, the number one precept of this Thiep Hien Order, which is different than our precepts, we start with the precepts focused on the body, actions of the body, and this is more of the actions of the mind. So here's the first one. First precept: do not be idolatrous about or bound to any doctrine, theory, or ideology, even Buddhist ones, All systems of thought are guiding means. They're not absolute truth. And so his point, but why that's so primary, why it's so important, why it's the first, is that we human beings will kill for their ideologies and their beliefs. And that's what happened in Vietnam, and we see a lot of strife today in our own political system between different ideologies, and we see the problems with clinging to those. So that was really interesting. I hadn't known that before. So what I take from that is that we just need to hold it lightly, what our beliefs are, what our values are, and to accept the humanity of people with opposing views, which is, it's a challenge to do that. It's a big challenge, especially in peace and justice work. So understanding that in peace and justice work could mean that that we just do what we feel is helpful and keep going while doing our internal practices of cultivating peace, peaceful seeds, peaceful bijas, seeing our own wounds and unmet needs and attending to them, and accepting the seeds of non-peace. Greed, hate, and delusion arise endlessly, it said in one of our sutras, one of our translations. So we just accept that that's the way it is, and we work to be aware of those as they arise, and to, and by being aware and being intimate and accepting that, then we won't need to act on that. We can heal those seeds. And then strive to live in ways that bring in the sunshine and the joy into our hearts. And that's Thich Nhat Hanh's message in a nutshell. He's a very serious and sort of a, he's sort of a rock, you know, a mountain, Thich Nhat Hanh. He has a very soft voice and manner, and his teachings are really simple about stopping and breathing and being simple. And sometimes his teachings are so simple that they're kind of too simple for our complicated minds. So we, at least for me, I used to sort of not get him too much. I liked the more complicated Mahayana teachings, I guess. But I do appreciate them now as I get older and just live each day in this world. I appreciate more and more his teaching, forged in the fire. So someone said recently that activists need more spiritual practice and spiritual people need to be more active in the world in order to balance, have a balance in today's world. Gandhi taught constructive program, which is building capacity in society for human thriving, while tending to the spirit through retreat, renunciation, fasting, and the practice of no self. He required that of his disciples that worked with him in his movement. Martin Luther King required strict adherence to nonviolence of his collaborators, his fellow activists in the civil rights movement. King lost his life. Thich Nhat Hanh lost citizenship and access to his homeland. They made ultimate sacrifices for their movements. So our tradition holds out the Bodhisattva way of life, the Bodhisattva ideal, as as something for us to shoot for in our practice. So we also are encouraged to let go of preferences, desires, and clinging to things, conditions, being a certain way, and preferences for the short run, in order to wake up to what Katagiri called real reality or suchness. So that's the main point of retreat practice, and daily practice, is to let go of what's extra, but first to determine what extra is in our lives. See what that is, and then let go of it with joy. It's a relief to let go of what's extra, to see it as that rather than some grim task, you know, self-sacrifice. Because letting go brings more joy, more ease, more flow, and more life, more aliveness to our life. So that's the good news. And we don't have to lose our life or our country. But it is interesting that people who are major players in the world in the spiritual world, spiritual, social, political world, the world of engaged Buddhism, have had to make some pretty deep sacrifices to do that. And they're misunderstood. They're misunderstood because the delusion in our culture runs deep. And the idea of self and other and enemies and compadres, you know, all these dualisms are so built in. And Katagiri gives three practices. He gives lots of practices, but three that he gives in for developing peace and harmony in this wonderful book that was edited by, really co-written by Andrea Martin, The Light That Shines Through Infinity. I'll just read to you a couple of excerpts here in this section called Peace and Harmony. There's so much in here, it's very packed, very dense with teachings. Oh, I like this story first. Tozan's whole heart. The Zen master Tozan was asked, "What is real Buddha beyond three categories of Buddha?" And he means from the perspective of Dharmakaya, Nirmanakaya, and Sambhogakaya, which are, it's a teaching about the three bodies of Buddha. So Tozan says, he says, "What's the true Buddha?" Tozan said, "Now, here I am, wholehearted." Wholeheartedness is a time and place where all categories, levels, and forms of discrimination simultaneously loosen into just this. That wholeheartedness is very serious, but also soft and flexible. Seriousness and flexibility come together and walk as one. In Buddhism, we simply try to be with Dharma as the very basic nature of existence, tasting it with our body and mind. If you're mindful of Dharma, then very naturally joyfulness is coming up. That joyfulness is not your usual idea of pleasure. It's human emotion coming up from the bottom of your heart. Whatever happens in your life, try to go beyond your pleasure or anger, like or dislike, and just be with Dharma, which he often refers to in this book as the most essential energy of of existence, including us. Stand up in the depth of human existence and take a deep breath there. Then take best care of your everyday life. Act wholeheartedly, constantly trying to be with that stream of great energy. That's the Zen way. This is a wonderful practice for us. And he talks too about developing tranquility, magnanimity, and awakening or enlightenment, which is awakening to the way it really is, to the universal non-dual perspective, which is beyond explanations. And I find that to be similar to Dogen's three minds, which I think are magnanimity, which is kind of like equanimity with boundless friendliness thrown in, parental mind and grandmotherly mind. Those were the three minds Dogen taught for his senior disciples taking care of the community, like the Tenzos and the Tenzo and the coordinator, the Eno, who organizes everything in the monastery. So the practice is stopping, breathing, seeing and accepting the seeds that are in our store consciousness. And by stopping, we can see them. When we keep moving with a busy world with a lot of distractions, a little harder to see those things manifest. People are seeing these things pretty clearly in this retreat. They're seeing those bijas, those seeds. So, and then watering the seeds of peace. I love that image. It's a great way to say nurturing those seeds. And then having that intention and getting support from others. So that's what Thich Nhat Hanh says is engaged Buddhism, is taking that practice, taking that just into your life, into our lives. So making that come alive in daily life. So no, that itself is engaged Buddhism. We think of engaged Buddhism as some large action that we take, you know, towards peace, like this 10 days of nonviolence. That is engaged. That can be engaged Buddhism, but engaged Buddhism is how we live our everyday life. All the little choices that we make, the way that we conduct ourselves, what we are communicating non-verbally and verbally to all of those in our vicinity. So that's pretty much what I have to say today on this topic. I recommend this book, which is written pretty long time ago, Being Peace. You'll find a lot in there about developing peace and about Thich Nhat Hanh's life and background that are really interesting. And in the talks we have online by Katagiri and in the books we have in the library, there's one of his themes that he went over and over is peace and harmony. And I learned a lot from listening to those talks and getting the perspective of someone from another culture looking into our culture and into our counterculture. So there's a lot of very applicable. He often used the Sangha itself as an example for talking about peace and harmony. And Thich Nhat Hanh in Being Peace talks about how when Western Dharma centers first developed, the people that came to them were alienated from the mainstream culture. So he said, you ended up with communities full of alienated people. And there was and people who had strong ideas about how things should go and be. And so there was probably more conflict in those days in the Sangha, and I certainly can attest to that with this Sangha, than there is now. We seem to have evolved. So that's great. So that's what I have to say today. And thank you for coming and listening. And we don't have discussion during retreats. No Q&A. But we do have a few announcements.